Hi, and welcome to episode 95 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the British superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man who doesn't so much put the cat amongst the pigeons, but more fires tons of cats at them with a giant cat-firing bazooka rifle. Yes, it's Tony Esmond.
I thought you'd go there with that. You didn't tell me you were doing that introduction as well, because I'm currently I'm currently hiding in the woods from a load of fucking cosplayers.
Yeah, Tony Esmond is in hiding at the moment on Hampstead Heath.
Yeah.
Combine other heaths and pleasure there.
Yeah, other heaths are available.
Yeah. Yes. And before we go too much off tangent, we've also got another guest this week. He's the writer of the awesome crime noir series With a Difference, Propeller, plus the new series that we talked about fairly recently from Vault Comics, Colossi. It's yes. Ricardo Moe.
Hello there.
Hey, dude. Good to see you.
Yeah. Hello. Hello.
Thanks for having me on. Thank
you. A pleasure. Time coming.
You are most welcome. Now, everyone knows that we're having a genre-tastic month so far, and we'll get into that. Look, I've created a word with genre-tastic, and I'm sticking to it.
You keep saying it every week.
I know. I kind of look. I've made my bed, and now I'm lying in it. Right. So, and we're going to talk about the awesome genre later on. But first, I think there's something we all have to talk about. Especially you, Tony. Tony, what have you done?
Can you just insert like noise of cracking knuckles and stretching just at this point? I went to Oxford Comic Con yesterday, also known as OxCon. Now, do not write a C in front of that. That's not funny. Okay. I went there. I'd have to say I had a sort of bit of a busy week this week, and I thought, oh, I just need like a nice sort of relaxation day. I'll go to a comic convention, and I know Sidesy was there. Sidesy's always good company, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I thought I'd go along, and fucking what an absolute car wreck it was. I even did a bit of research. I even like messaged them to see what comics they'd have there beforehand.
What inspired you? You know, what inspired you to do this one? Has it happened? Is it the second year this year of it?
Second year this year, but it's only 40 minutes from me.
Right.
And I quite like Oxford. Oxford's quite a nice town, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was in the examination halls, which is sort of quite a historic building. I thought that sounds interesting. So that sounds like an old school comic convention, you know. Slightly put off by the fact that Dave Prowse and Colin Baker are there. So Colin Baker would probably come to a convention held in my garden shed.
You said he does virtually all of them, doesn't he?
He does.
Loads of them.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone in the United Kingdom. I'm going to say probably most of Europe as well that doesn't have a Colin Baker autograph.
But who wants one, that is?
Saying that, spoke to him very briefly and was very nice. And he also was collecting for a dog's charity on his table. Now, that to me, I thought, okay, I'll give him a pass there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, if he's doing it for charity, I don't think he completely was doing it for charity. I'll be fair to him. But I thought, right, I'll give him a pass for that. But, yeah, well, whatever. Anyway, but I went £18 to get in for the day. £18.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is that a day ticket or is that a weekend ticket? What is
day
that?
Day ticket.
A day
and they open late.
A day 18. Ticket. £18.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That is.
That's piss taking it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I asked them on the Facebook page and they didn't say anything back, although they then posted other stuff about cosplayers and stuff. And then I got to the queue, and I got there early, had a coffee across the road, thought I'll wait for the queue to go down once it opens. That's always a wise move, isn't it? Mm. And they opened late, so I ended up queuing up for a short amount of time, probably about 15, 20 minutes, surrounded by people probably half my age screaming things like, oh, look, there's a droid. Because there was a dustbin making noises somewhere. And I almost turned around at that point and thought, oh, really? You know what I mean? I just can't stand it.
Yeah. all right, then, carry on, Victor Meldrew. Come on.
They have the old cars parked outside?
No, they didn't. I think they would have done if they could. But they didn't have that. They had lots of Star Wars crap and people dressed as characters. I don't understand standing outside in role, you know, like acting as if they're, you know, they're actually characters.
You're not a fan of method acting, are you?
No, not at all. Listen, I got a lot of flack today because this all comes from the fact that I wrote a piece about conventions in general. And this was a sort of the last bit of my sort of road test around this piece was going to Oxford Comic Con, to be fair. And I, as you know, I've sort of been to a lot of Comic Cons over the years, probably hundreds. And cosplaying is not reading comics. It's not their hobby. I'm not saying, you know, their hobby is dressing up. Okay. So I just find them very annoying. You know, I don't know. What you lot see. You've gone quiet, Ricardo. You've got a big cosplay following, haven't you? I know that.
I would hope so. I may be kissing them goodbye after this, though.
And look, and celebrities from TV or soap operas or reality TV, then that's not a comic convention. Shouldn't be a comic convention either. It's not a comic, is it? You know. So I sort of wrote a list of things I think were wasted at comic conventions and are hurting the fact that a table could be available to a small press or comics professional at a convention. I've got a bit of flack, actually. I'm going to say 70% positive and in agreement. Probably 10% just people who just are clearly ignoramuses and sort of posted for their own purposes. You know, you say something about something else and someone's... I think one of our friends said, look, it's like going to Crufts and finding out it's all about cats. And someone said, yeah, but... which I thought was quite good.
I didn't see that. Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And I thought, well, that's quite a good analogy. And then someone said, yeah, but Crufts is a corrupt institution. I thought, it's got fuck all to do with what he just said.
Yeah.
I recounted my story about not being able to eat my sandwich while standing in front of a ginger Hagrid in an Alice in Wonderland dress who's I could see his junk hanging out. I got called intolerant and gingerist, which I've never been called before, actually. I was quite pleased there's an insult that I've not so far had.
Gingerist, okay.
Gingerist. Yeah. But what I am pleased about is that it started a sort of a conversation, really. Start a conversation about comic conventions and what should and shouldn't be at a comic convention, because Comic Con has been so stolen from us now at this point that people think, you know, when you say to you've got to, you know, we all hide the fact that we're comic readers, don't we? People think you're pedophiles,
pretty much.
So we all sort of so we hide it, and someone says, oh, you're going to a comic convention, and the first question you get is, are you dressing up? It's the first question you get, isn't it? You know,
yeah, I've usually said, are you going as anything?
Yeah,
that's what I say. You're going as anything. Like,
and
me.
You think, what the fuck has that got to do with reading a comic? Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
You know. And I still to this day stand by it that I haven't seen any cosplayers buy comics. I've never seen it. People say they do. I'm prepared to believe them because I can't prove that they're wrong, to be fair. But I've not seen it. I don't know. I've been to hundreds of comic conventions, and certainly over the last year and a half, I've kept an eye out for it. And anyway, not seen it. But I think the point is, you can hold a successful comic convention that isn't a load of crap Funkos, and one store was selling horns that you can drink beer from. You know, there was more table space down to horns than there was to comics at this convention.
It seems to be moving that shift towards having like the pop culture cons or whatever they call it now, where it is just stuff like that, and I'd like to think they're kind of getting a bit savvy to that and moving it one way or the other.
Yeah, and it's hurting us. I think it's hurting us. I think people go to them and they don't think it's anything to do with comics. You know, how many people buy a comic at an MCM? You know, it's got to be like 0.1 per person comic, isn't it? You know, if you're lucky.
If someone does stick their neck out and go to a comic con, then they find out it's a hall full of that tat kind of stuff.
Yeah.
To be fair, you talk about like the San Diego Comic Con, and they've got so much floor space, they can house that stuff and the comic stuff.
Yeah,
and be a good kind of mix. But when you kind of, I don't know how big OxCon was, like 20, 30 tables?
Oh, no, it's more. It's hundreds.
Hundreds, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hundreds of tables.
So it was quite...
Kind of two floors.
It was quite big then. It was quite a
picture. Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, you got to remember that it's all the big examination halls where all the students have sat, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah, hundreds of tables and on two floors in about 5-6 different rooms. But I mean, I think Comic Cons are doable. I think, look at the 2000 AD one.
Yeah.
That was just about comics. I mean, there was a few cosplayers just to sort of brighten it up a bit, weren't there? But it was a comic event, and it was absolutely mobbed down and sold out in weeks, you know, a couple of weeks.
Mm.
I think it's possible.
That was quite a specific one.
Yes, and... but then again, if they had a 2000 AD convention every week, no one would go to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how I see it.
Yeah.
I think there's too many.
Also, the tickets for that one were quite high. But because it's aimed at a focused audience... yeah, they're going to sell out, aren't they? Immediately.
Yeah. But like UCAC used to sell out, and Bristol was busy, and but now we've got, you know, you're taking a gamble. I mean, I spent what, 30 quid on petrol, you know, tenner on parking, you know, and then 18 quid to get into a comic convention that didn't have anything I wanted to buy. You know, and basically I'm paying to go in to buy something is essentially what it's about.
Mm. So don't get that. Why not keep the price of entry down? Yeah. Because you get more people through the door and more people to, essentially you're buying yourself into a shop to buy stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
I don't know why you wouldn't just keep the price down a bit and then let people kind of come in. And because say if you're just walking past with a family and there's like you got the parents, two kids, that's not doable going into that.
No, it's not that price. At all, is it? Yeah. Yeah, I think if you paid online, you could get in after 12 or 12:30. I can't remember what it was for 12 quid or 15 quid. I can't remember. But still, it's quite high.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, is there that much of a market of people who just want to go in and look at just various bits? I mean, you could buy socks, necklaces. There was more tables for necklaces than there were for comics. You know.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think they're underestimating the appeal of comics, and they're trying to appeal to a broader audience by selling socks and horns and?
Yeah, maybe. And yeah. I know you're not a big congoer, are you, Ricardo? We've talked about it. You're sort of thinking about doing one soon, or
no? I'm hoping to go to some this year.
Right.
I haven't previously.
Well, what puts you off it, dude? Is there any particular reason, or
honestly, because most of them seem more like OxCon than kind of comics, and
yeah.
I'm not a big reader or collector of kind of the old comics.
Right.
So for me, the draw is just to go and see artists, you know, the kind of artist alley bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Many cons just don't really have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a balance between if I'm going to pay for a train ticket, you know, go to wherever the con is, and then pay for entry and everything. And it also there's like a cost of it a day away from my family. And if I'm going to go there and kind of be disappointed in the way that you were, then it's just not worth it.
Don't get me wrong, there are some great, I mean, Leamington True Believers, Nottingham, Elcaf, Thought Bubble, you know, there are lots of very good comic conventions, you know. It's just there's some that to me these are just based on cash. It's just that's the sad thing about it, it's just a big cash grab.
Yeah,
you know,
so some of those that you just mentioned, they're the ones that I'm aiming to go to.
Right.
But I mean, they tend to be a bit further away from me, so
I get you. Yeah. You're down on the south coast, are you, Ricardo?
I am. As far south as you can get. Practically in the sea.
I would consider a test because I'm not a massive con guy myself, and it's kind of it's always a bit of sticking your neck out, like getting a table and
getting
your stock and getting yourself there and all the money you got to lay out. Yeah, I mean, basically, you want to cover your cost, but you mentioned, Ted, I don't know if you want to mention creators by name, but some of them didn't have a good time at all.
Yeah, today. I spoke to one creator. I don't think I'll name them, but they sold nothing today. Very talented creator.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
That would slay me. It's not like kind of like a big ego thing, but it's kind of like, well, why am I fucking doing this then? If
I don't really want to put a percentage. I spoke to Gary... Gary Watson earlier about it, and he's a sensible chap and also a big attender of comic conventions, you know, and he was saying, look, it's like 80%, and I make him right around that to a certain extent. I think 80% comics is a good yardstick, but I would say I would go a little bit further than that and say it should be about comics. If it's about tat, or it's about, call it a pop culture, call it, you know, a geek fest or a nerd fest or something like that, you know. There's plenty of things. They had no comic guests at it. So I think that's a sign. If you're not paying for anyone to come who is a comic guest, then how is it a comic convention?
Yeah.
But you're renting tables out to a couple of small Paris people. You know.
Is it different if you call it like a film and Comic-Con, which some of them do? Would you obviously you'd still need comic guests. I totally agree with that. But would you be more lenient about that? Because
I would say that's better.
Yeah.
I would say that's a bit better, but it's still misleading. If for example, Morecambe Comic-Con had nothing, absolutely no comics at it. strange you had Colin Baker at it as well. It had absolutely no comics at it, and that's terrible. And I think, as I understand it, they've just renamed themselves Heroes and Villains Family Day Out or something, I think, for next year. No, that's okay. I'll get that. That's
fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
You know? But yeah, if I'd, you know, I'm occasionally up in that neck of the woods. If I'd have gone to Morecambe Comic Con and taken the day, I'd have been definitely asking for my money back on that one. Mm. You know, and I think that's kind of where we got to go with it. If we go to these things, you know, you've got to say, you've got to make your voice heard. You've got to say, look, you advertise this as a comic convention. I'm a fan of comics, collector, reader, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I wanted to come here to buy comics. Don't call it a comic convention.
Yeah.
Because it is hurting us. You know, the table that was selling socks or Photoshop prints could be selling back issues or have a creator at it or an artist. You could pay for someone to come along, you know.
But like Ricardo mentioned there, if you're going to kind of spend all that time and money going to a Comic-Con as a small creator to get a table, and then you turn up and there's just like a hall full of fucking Deadpool hats and whatever.
There's so many new creators popping up as well. And I know certainly when I decide to stick my toe into the pool of like going to Comic-Cons, you're just looking at the list and seeing, you know, you'll go for anything, you know, because you're like, oh, yeah, because you think they're all going to be Comic-Cons. You know, they're all going to have comics at them. So there's...
Yeah.
But since I started, I know it's only been a couple of years, but there's been even more of these faux Comic-Con shows. So for new creators just starting now, you know, they wouldn't necessarily know which ones are the good ones to...
Yeah.
And there may be one that's local to them, so they go to that, and then they're the only comics table there. Do you know what I mean? So they can't even really learn anything from other small person indie creators. Do you know what I mean? They're just awash in this sea of horns.
Maybe there was some kind of podcast they could listen to.
Yeah. I think Shane put it right. He's a big proponent of comic conventions as comic conventions. You know, Shane Chebsey, who's been on before.
Yes.
I think if you go to our chat page, there's I think he's put a link in, hasn't he, to comic conventions that are worthy sort of additions to what you should be thinking about doing, as opposed to, you know, just dustbins on wheels. And there was a bloke in it, it was from Star Wars, I can't remember his name now, he's one of the sort of Imperial officers, English actor, and I've never seen anyone look so sad at their table. I caught his eye as I walked past.
That's
he didn't
a
have
lie,
a banner
you'd be next to me.
That is true. But he... I walked past his table and he didn't have a banner, just had some old tatty, you know, photographs on his table. And he just looked up at me with these sort of, you know, sunken eyes. And I thought, that's the saddest thing I've ever seen.
But what gesture were you making at him? Were you, like, giving him the evil eye as you walked past?
I was doing that pretend thing where you pretend your fly's undone so he looks down at your junk. That thing.
I think it's weird because I've only started really going back to cons since being on the show and getting involved. And before then, like when I was going to UCAC and Bristol, when you went to a comic con, it was just wall to wall comics. There used to be trestle tables filled with long boxes.
Yeah.
And that's all there was. And I can't remember anything else apart from that. Like people flogging homemade comics on printed
out
on
A4. How are you supposed to get people into comics if there's none there to sell? Or for them to buy, you know. They need to buy it. And cheap ones, you know, like loads of cheap sort of 50p, like they did at London Super Comic Con year for last, like loads of cheap, you know, good comics, you know, do that.
Again, if you was kind of like, I've got a burgeoning interest in comics, then you went to something like that, and you thought, this isn't for me, and don't go to one again.
Yeah.
That's like a reader lost there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh, well. Oh, there was a table selling Japanese packet food.
What?
Yeah, well, it wasn't just one table. I think it was four tables. You know, like where they do it, where you sort of stand in the middle of four tables. And
they're
selling Japanese, like, food. Just incredible.
It's just that. Like I said, it would have done... If there was a kind of a nerd or geek con or whatever you want to call it, that would have just... That's fine. Okay.
Yeah.
No problem.
I, you know, it's come to the point where I'm calling it time of death. We just need to let the phrase Comic-Con go.
But what do we do? Comic art festival? No, I mean, they tend to be a little bit.
There's lots
more
of shows that use the word festival. For instance, True Believers, Thought Bubble. You know, they don't.
The Lakes, I think, do the same, don't they?
Yeah, they're all festivals now. They don't. I think maybe people think about that when they're organising these things as well. Sometimes they take in the fact that maybe they don't want to use the term Comic Con because it might be associated.
It's a bit corrupted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think for those, for the true comic shows, yeah, occasionally you get ones like Leamington Comic Con, you know, that's bang on. But I think there'll be more shows.
Yeah, Nottingham's the same, isn't it? Nottingham's a Comic Con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it would find its level after a while, and like a lot of these Comic Cons, which aren't Comic Cons, start kind of advertising differently. And
yeah,
I'd like to think that it'll find its level.
You naive, beautiful swan.
When we like, we talk about the death of the Western, don't we, in comparison to the death of the superhero movie. That's an often made analogy, isn't it? And I think we'll get to the point where, I mean, superhero movies have started going into that self-parody, haven't they? Which is sometimes the little note on the door that, you know, something, you know, we're going to start slipping down the hill in a few years' time. And I think once that happens, will people still be wanting to go and dress as Deadpool, you know, at conventions? And then we might see a key change in it. We might see something, you know, change where suddenly, you know, because the hipster side of things around comics is still burgeoning. It's still a growing field, isn't it?
Yeah.
It might feel, you know, it'll go a little bit underground again for a while.
With Deadpool, it was kind of very much like underground, kind of, it was like a mascot of 4chan, and then he kind of moved on to other stuff, and then that, it was kind of a bit of a sleeper character that a lot of people were involved in, and now it's got very big, and when stuff usually gets really big, a lot of people start getting turned off of it, because so many people were into it, and
they
like
start
it.
Hoping it'll fail sometimes, don't they?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think like films like Guardians, even though I love it, that was kind of...
There's a self-parody aspect.
Yeah, it was a self-parody, and then Deadpool took that even further. That said, I'm looking forward to Guardians 2
next week. Yeah, I can't wait to see that. Yeah, so. It's we'll still be here. We'll still be moaning and like trying to sell our comics at conventions and stuff, won't we?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I was... the selling comics, I put a tweet up in the week about like doing a webcomic. And if you ever want any like a facet of your work picked over by an army of pedants, start a webcomic. Because I just go through the comments. I'm really behind on my comments, like answering readers' questions, and they answer like ask really specific stuff. Like I've drawn a battleship that was like decommissioned, and they said, "Why have you used this battleship when it's decommissioned in XXX date?" And Vanguard is set like in the future.
They're sort of the great sort of people. They're the avocado people back in, aren't they? The avocado people selling avocados in the supermarket.
What do the avocado people do?
They just stare at. Have you ever been? I know you're more of a Waitrose. I'm more Tesco's. And you go into Tesco's, and someone, you know, wearing flip flops or something, will be staring at an avocado, seeing if it's fresh enough, for about 4 fucking hours. Oh,
God. I just wonder why you're staring at them for 4 hours.
Hey, it's not doing it. I hang about by the cat food because there's a lot of sort of ladies who've got cats, aren't there? Single ladies, so I go there.
One thing, the Waitrose newspaper, that found a copy of it found its way to our house. And
I see. It found its way to your house. Yes.
I was mopping up some spilt coffee and one of the pages jumped at me and they're running the advert, the contest for the Phoenix comic.
Oh, okay.
The kids designed their own superhero.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got till the end of next month to submit it. So,
that's great.
If you're Waitrose,
Phoenix is so good with all the stuff that they do.
What supermarket do you go to, Ricardo?
I'm a Tesco's boy.
See, I knew you'd be. I could tell that. That's why we bonded so well. Well, you, Vince, you're more sort of Lidl, aren't you?
Scandinavian totally Lidl. Value. You know, it's when it first started, a lot of people were down on it, but now they have very fine quality meats and vegetables. So I'd give it a go, especially if you like biscuits that you can't pronounce the name of.
Yeah. As we said, I'm more of a Tesco's man, but where I live, there's the Tesco's and the Waitrose, and the Tesco's is just not an option.
Yeah.
Is it?
It's not an option.
It doesn't do your potato dauphinoise, does it, Dan? So you can't
go when
there.
I first moved into this area, they did not nowhere. I couldn't buy a falafel anywhere. Still can't. I went into the shop and asked, "Have you got any falafel?" And the man behind the counter, his lips just like curled up like in a sneer.
As I thought, I leave. Falafel.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
I like falafel.
Yeah. Full circle back to falafel.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if at London Super Comic Con this year, if anyone comes up to the table and gives Dan some falafel, we'll give them a prize.
There'll be a prize for any falafel giving.
You know you're going to be inundated with falafel. Yeah.
That's all right.
There's only three people listening to this, Ricardo. It's fine. And two of them are mental.
Yeah. Don't listen to that, Mum.
The other thing I was going to say as well is I'd be interested to hear what the state of comic convention in other countries. And I've got a few people in the States who listen. Let us know if that's the sort of thing you butt your heads up against all round. Interesting to hear.
Yeah.
Lucas from FeeWub did that as well, the Reckless Wrestlers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He had one that was just an absolute fucking shit fest like that.
Yeah.
Just tat.
Yeah. I've had quite a few reads of that post in Poland today. I have to say, it's now become the biggest read thing on my blog.
I think he shared it and tagged in a few of his friends, and they were like, yep.
Okay.
And look, you know, let's just say this for the record. You know, obviously, there's some cold, hard truths in there, but it's also written with a sense of satire.
Yeah, it's meant to be slightly funny, satirical, and in character.
Yeah.
Gronier's just written me a tweet, actually. It says, make a cup of tea in your R2-D2 mug, pull a cookie out of your TARDIS biscuit container, and enjoy the rantings of a man who's just had enough. I want that on my pull list, on my pull quote, if I ever write a book.
But it's like Kirby Enthusiasm, isn't it? It's Larry David playing an exaggerated Larry David.
Oh, my God. Tony is our Larry David.
It's the best thing ever. It's made my day.
And according to Dan, I'm the Alan Partridge. I don't know how to
go full Partridge.
I've got to say, I'm disappointed though to think that's not the real Tony. I want that to be what he's like all the time.
Yeah, I did an interview with you a few years ago, and it was very polite.
How times change, eh?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Just a broken man. You can blame yourself, Ricardo. That's fine.
If you haven't read their blog post yet, if you're one of the probably three people in the world who hasn't, we'll put a link up in the show notes, won't we, Tony? And,
yeah, we will do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Please don't hate me.
Everyone loves you, Tony.
I kind of like it, though. It's weird, isn't it? I kind of like to be hated sometimes. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Good.
Oh, dear.
Right.
Back yes. So there you go. I felt that needed to be discussed at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's quite fresh, isn't it?
Like
Dan's avocados.
Don't eat avocados. Thank you.
He's getting a bit feisty. Right?
I do go into Waitrose for the free coffee, though.
Oh, yeah.
I'm one of those people.
You've got to buy something now, though, haven't you, in order to get that, isn't that? They've sort of cut back on, you can't just walk in and just get a free coffee, because everyone was doing it.
It's welcome hard to go the supermarket podcast. And you get a free coffee. It's kind of...
You get a pastry, do you, Dan? What pastry do you get?
Do these kind of interlaced ones with caramel and pecan nuts over the top.
Oh, I love them. The maple ones. Maple syrup. Oh, delightful. Anyway, comics.
I like almond croissants. They're nice.
Oh, God. Right. Ricardo, what's your favourite pastry?
I like an apple turnover.
Oh, left field.
Was that controversial?
No.
What have I done?
Was it controversial, folks? You can email us at
that. Twitter poll. What's best?
Have you got more hate mail about that than about the convention? Yeah.
Mate, you're kidding. This is genre-tastic month. Next week's going to be comics about pastries.
Don't, because I might do it. as Tony said, it is the best word in the world ever. It's genre-tastic month, isn't it? There's 5 weeks of April, and we decided to do 5 genre shows. I'm so tired. No, it's week 4 of the genre rumble, as it were. And so far, we've covered monsters, martial arts, and robots in comics so far. And they've all been highly entertaining episodes.
Yep.
Certainly, last week's with JP Bove talking about robots went to some dark and twisted places.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
I'm quite glad that the end of the recording fucked up a bit because we didn't get any outtakes because there was some particularly embarrassing ones that could have been in there.
Yes. Think about that. Think about that, folks. You know the content of last week's show if you heard it. Just imagine what the outtakes could have been. Jesus. but yeah, this week. We've decided to cover one of the, I think, probably one of the biggest genres there is. Wouldn't you agree? I think.
It's one that definitely spreads out into other sort of books, doesn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this week we're talking crime comics. Yes.
Yeah.
It may not be front and center at the big two, even though there's certainly, you know, crime books within them, I would say. But probably after, I'm just going to say that after superhero comics, I would say the crime genre is probably the most popular, especially when it comes to those like who make comics, like writers and artists and stuff. Don't you think?
Okay.
Would you say the second?
I think there's certainly elements of crime in so many books. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And I know we discussed it. We're going to keep it quite tight around crime, aren't we? You could easily say, oh, Batman's a crime book, Spider-Man's a crime book because he stops bank robberies, but we're keeping it more sort of tight. But it is something that is a theme. I mean, you could say there's crimes in Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Wars and all sorts of things.
Yeah. If you strip back a lot of the elements of books, you kind of take it back to the raw basics of, is it like a kind of slice of life story where someone's finding out their partner's cheating on them, or is it going to be a kind of crime story where they're stepping outside the law to do something? And then you can bolt on, it's a Western, it's a superhero, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. But we've gone more for the sort of, I'm going to guess at your, because I think I know some of your choices, a more sort of noiry crime sort of element to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Heisty type things.
I would say, you could say the more real life crime. Or realistic in its own way. And certainly, correct me if I'm wrong, but there were crime comics before there were really superhero comics. Do you know what I mean? When there was the big boom in like the 40s, 50s. I know we had, you know, Batman. There was the Batman. When did Batman start? I can't believe that's completely gone.
39-40, isn't it?
Yeah. But that was still within, you know, there was gangster comics, and it was mainly a lot of crime stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, look at Dick Tracy, something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Some donkeys years ago. But, I think so.
So crime was, you know, there were literally titles just called crime comics, weren't there?
Oh, yeah. You had, like, certainly even the 40s and 50s, you had books like Crime Does Not Pay, True Crime Comics. Like, that was Jack Cole, wasn't it? And Justice Traps the Guilty. That's the one I looked up the other day, 1947. And that had Simon and Kirby and also John Severin in. So it was the superhero capes of, you know, of the day, wasn't it, almost, you know?
Yeah.
Essentially, those comics brought in the code, didn't they? Consumer code.
They're very much responsible for that. And the horror stories, very much the sort of the hard crime books,
The classic cover of someone who had chopped off their wife's head. That was a crime book, wasn't it, I believe?
Yeah, so those sort of Omeri endings, aren't they? You know, where they're sort of, oh, God, what's happened there? You know, it's like crime or horror, you know, or sort of supernatural books that have that little twist in the ending, you know.
And that for me is what helps make a lot of the genre. That stands out to me as some of the best stuff. So to take that away, to ban that's neutering it a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
I can certainly see we were talking before we came on air about your book, Propeller, and without ruining anything, there's a little bit of that going on in that, isn't there, Carlo?
Yeah. I grew up watching kind of Twilight Zone.
I think you quoted to me as well.
Hitchcock, grew up watching Hitchcock films. So I
can totally see that in Propeller, actually. I can totally see the Hitchcock influence.
It was so deliberate. We're throwing in as much Hitchcock as we could. Because if you're going to steal from someone, steal from the master.
Yeah.
For me, that twist in the tale is what I always it's what you walk away remembering, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, and also the style of the piece, I think, to a certain extent. You know all the guys wear, you know, raincoats and hats, and you know there's that sort of almost like black and white element to it that's just got that sort of style to it, I think, that works with so many of the sort of films that we all grew up on, really, you know. And the noir stuff.
Yeah. It's got that sort of Mad Men style sort of 50s, 60s sort of dress sense and, you know, feeling to it, if that makes sense. If you ask me, when everyone dressed a little better.
Yeah.
The sort of days of... Exactly why we did it. I'm not going to start dressing like that, but I like, you know, when men used to wear hats and raincoats and
time when they came home from work and stuff like that. Yeah.
Everyone was in a suit of some kind.
Can't wear a hat like that nowadays.
No, you're a hipster if you wear that hat now, aren't you?
Yeah. Or a neck bed. Neckbeard. You're not wearing a fedora.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. the kind of look you go for. That was uncalled for.
Yeah.
I'll try that.
All right. I'll let you off.
Because I read Propeller while I was reading a load of hard case crime novels. Have you read any of them, Ricardo?
I haven't. They've been on my reading list for a long time. I've seen a lot of the older kind of noir films.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I took influence from an awful lot of those. But like I say, it's one of those. I've got a list of books that one day I'm going to have the time to sit down and actually read them.
Feeling.
At the same time, though, it's nice to not read things that are definitely sort of in the same wheelhouse as what you're going for. You know, for instance, I've got a couple of ideas that clearly I could watch a film or read this certain book, but I don't want to because then that might influence what I'm writing. So anything that may be similar, I want to be just coincidental, not because it's been in the back of my mind. Does that make sense?
Staying away from that sort of cultural zeitgeist sometimes is a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
because everyone's sort of got this sort of vague hive mind, haven't they, where everything sort of seems to sort of flow the same way.
It can be annoying as well if you've got a concept and then you read or watch something and someone's had a similar concept and fleshed it out and you're like, oh fuck. Like you said, that kind of taints it straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, can't do that now.
Yeah.
Now, you're saying bitter, Dan. Has that happened?
Well, yeah, it happens a lot, to be honest.
That's why we just watch pornography.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I was going to do that.
Yeah. And then later you can.
Yeah.
So has anyone got any sort of... let's start with you, Ricardo. What are your sort of favourite crime comics, if you had to choose a few? What have you really enjoyed?
Initially, you asked this question on Twitter, and initially my response was Sleeper. Brubaker and Phillips
series. Was that the beginning of that beautiful marriage?
I think so.
I think it was right near the beginning. I think they may have done one or two other things before that.
Mm.
He was Coward before that, I'm not sure. Maybe. Yeah, okay.
But, I mean, for me, that was... As well, that was kind of the first time that I'd seen the idea of superpowers in a different genre. Just as something that existed and was in the background but wasn't the focus. The focus for me in that one was absolutely the kind of the crime and moving into kind of a spy angle.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that run runs on to this day. I mean, what did you have then? You had Criminal, Fatal, The Fade Out, and now you've got Kill or Be Killed, which I've got in front of me, which is just...
And one of my personal favourites, which is, superhero tinge, but Incognito.
Oh yes, and I really like that as well. Yeah, but that retains. That's a crossover book. I mean, to me, that's a crime book where they happen to have superheroes in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's that reversal, isn't it? You know.
See, I always think of Sleeper and Incognito as kind of like a pairing,
right?
In that you've got in Sleeper, you've got the good guy who's undercover with the bad guys, and then Incognito is obviously the bad guy that's kind of turned witness protection, hasn't he? And he's also kind of suppressing what he is. So for me, those two always go hand in hand. And I love...
We were talking about this before, Vince, weren't we? They've got this... Dan's such a fine art, Brubaker and Sean Phillips. And Elizabeth Brightwiser on colours, because she adds such a sort of cool element to it. You know, it's just so gorgeous stuff. Yeah. I'd love to see a script from them, actually. I don't read the monthly, so I don't see the back matter. I just read the trades. But I'd love to see what a script, you know, what they have to communicate with each other in order to get a page out. Because I imagine it's been... reduced where they sell a language, haven't they, you know?
Yeah. Mm. It's that sort of trust, isn't it? But I know I know there's one particular series, quite a major series, that Ricardo mentioned. Do you want to say what it is, Ricardo? It's the one that I think is a lot of people's favourites.
For me, the absolute best crime books, Richard Starks, Parker.
Yeah, I agree.
The Darwin Cook adaptation.
It's just basically 0.0 for any crime. You know, everything comes out of that to me. You know, and have you read the novels? Are just amazing as well. I read the novel. I clawed my way through the novels like at fast speed a couple of years ago. Just amazing.
I want to. Again, I've seen a couple of film adaptations.
Yeah,
yeah. There's been a few now, aren't there? Unfortunately, one with Statham in, but yeah, and Jenny from the Block.
I tell you what, though, I love. Oh God,
Mel Gibson's one.
Yeah, Payback.
I like that.
Yeah. I've not good. Seen that one.
That scene where he walks over the bridge and he's stealing yeah. things as he goes and he makes money as he's just walking down the street is straight out of the first Parker yeah. novel.
I think you'll really like that, Dan. I think that's right up your wheelhouse.
Oh, I have to check yeah. that one out. Mm.
And it's shot in that sort of washed out grey tone style, isn't it? You know, it's they've made that attempt at the noir sort of thing to
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
see, I saw Payback years and years ago, way before I read The Hunter, which is the Parker book that it's based on. And as I was reading The Hunter, it just I started to think, hold on, this is familiar. I recognise this story.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how I came to it backwards, if you will.
Yeah.
But, gotcha.
But yeah. You can say that Darwin Cook's work in that I don't think will ever be touched in terms of
yeah.
I mean, just looking at the way he just used the use of tones and colours and stuff, you know, never mind how he's adapted this crime story, but just visually it's perfection, really, isn't it?
It's so beautiful, it's so simple as well, not to take anything away from how much effort he clearly put in. It looks so minimal and simple.
It's just the shapes and the shadows and everything is just it's just concise storytelling, which is what you want, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
that was and the what, beauty of Cook's work, though, wasn't it? You know, it looked very, very simple, but it takes a true master to get that kind of, you know.
See, to me, he has an almost animation style, but he doesn't. It's almost that, isn't it? But it's also sort of ruthlessly cool and sort of hard edged as well.
Yeah.
That's why I absolutely love it. I've got Slayground in front of me, which I think is the shorter. I think it's one of the shorter novels as well.
Yeah.
And it's in the snow, and he does it with that sort of grey-blue wash to it.
Mm. Does he do every... I actually haven't got any of the Parker books.
Right.
Darwin Cook's Parker books. I need to get them on the shelf. I want that Martini edition. God, that would be absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, but that's the one that's got that... there was a poorly distributed one. Is it the man with the such-and-such face, or what's the one with the bandaged face one? And that's in the Martini edition, but it's quite hard to come by otherwise, I think.
Yeah. The price of that is just crazy. But am I right in thinking that he uses a different colour for each story?
I can't remember. I've got the other ones, but I don't think everyone. I think he uses an orange in some of them, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Don't think it's a different one per book. I don't think so.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
The Hunter is kind of grey. The outfit is more of a dark blue. The score, orange, and then Slayground back to kind of the grey. So kind of more or less.
Yeah. So he's used a palette.
Oh, it is a different one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the Twitter, Nick Prolix, at Nick Prolix, he actually said, Darwin Cook's Parker books are a high point of crime comics for me. Uses the comics form to tell the story in ways that other media just can't.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is just spot on, really, isn't it?
But he says it perfectly there. I mean, the amount that Darwin Cook does without using word balloons, without using words even, he just has pages where it's just close-ups and kind of Parker moving through the city, and it's just gorgeous. It's absolutely...
Oh, I love that scene. Yeah, no, the little hand movements and the coins and all that sort of thing. Yeah. Really, really good.
You see him committing these tiny crimes just so effortlessly, and you're like, right, I know everything about this guy now. He's a bad guy, but you know, he's not blatantly going and robbing innocent people.
Yeah, why isn't someone making a TV series with the bloke from Mad Men in this role? I just don't understand that. It's just perfect cast.
You're talking about John Hamm as Parker. Oh, that'd be so good.
It'd be just brilliant, isn't it? Yeah,
that'd be so good.
Because I know that the Darwin Cook series is the only one that Donald Westlake, who is Richard Stark, allowed them to use the Parker name, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because if you look at Point Blank and the outfit...
But how did they get away with it for the Statham?
Because he passed away.
Is that why they...
Yeah, that's why. Yeah.
Bastards.
Yeah, shame in it. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind Statham. I like Statham in certain things, but he's not
that character.
Because if I remember correctly, in Payback, he's called Porter.
Right, okay.
And Payback is also, in some ways, a remake. What was that old one from the 60s? Point Blank.
Point Blank, yeah, with Lee Marvin, which is genius.
Yeah.
Absolutely an amazing film. Just the scene of him walking down a corridor, and they sort of they lift the sound of the footsteps, and he's this sort of man on a mission. And it's just so well done. It's an incredible film. Yeah, the outfit's a film as well. That's I'm trying to think of the actor in it, but that's another one where they couldn't use the same name. But you can't get it on DVD. I don't think it's available here. Mm. But yeah, just to me, I don't think it's such a shame that both of them, Richard Stark and Darwin Cook, passed away, because this was just like running on, wasn't it? It was just incredible. Mm. You know,
it was a highlight. Whenever one of those books got released, yeah, it was just certainly my life a highlight. And yeah, obviously Darwin Cook passing away was obviously a very sad time for the comics industry as a whole, but particularly for anyone who was following along with those books and waiting for the next one. It was heartbreaking. Yeah.
And the other thing he did, with sort of crime wise, I really like, is when he did The Spirit. He did a run on The Spirit when DC got that as they were able to print Spirit comics. Incredible stuff. Mm. And I think you can find that quite cheaply. You get that in back bins and stuff like back issue bins. Quite a lot of things. Well,
The
worth
Spirit
picking up.
Got mentioned a few times on Twitter actually when it came to the crime genre.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right.
And the other ones that we got mentioned when we put the shout out for, just Alan Henderson. But Kane by Paul Grist was an amazing crime noir book. Kane's a great series.
Yeah, it's good, yeah. We're now close personal friends of Paul Grist.
We're close friends with everyone who talked to us.
He sat next to us and ignored us at a comic convention. No, he didn't. He spoke to us briefly, but he was just clearly annoyed by our larking about.
Yeah. Johnny Cannon actually added to it at Cannon Hill Comic. He said, the storytelling is ridiculously good. Rabbit Hunt is fantastic.
Rabbit Hunt is the book
that I've got. I think that's got one issue which has absolutely no words. It's got no dialogue or anything, but it's just one of the best silent issues I've ever read.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I've got a page from Kane on my wall here. Yeah, really nice. Yeah, nice. Great stuff.
Simon Russell, at Simon at Boeing. He mentioned a few. For instance, From Hell. The work of Alex Toth, Don McGregor.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The Detectives by Don McGregor. I've got the hardback of that. And I think Gene Colan. Just incredible stuff. Yeah, brilliant.
He also said the latest Spider-Woman series.
Oh, no, I'm not reading that. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I suppose when you look at it, like things like, all the old British comedy weeklies, they were all the kids were trying to steal stuff and get away with things, weren't they?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Scrumping apples.
Comic, yeah, when you look at stuff like Action, you know, the Actions Weekly in the UK, that had like Dredger and all these sort of things. You know, there was crime stories going on in that as well, weren't there? You know?
Yeah. Mm. Another one that Simon mentioned, Stray Bullets. It's one I've never read, but I know it's not exactly one for a happy ending, is it, Stray Bullets?
Yeah. Oh, it's so bleak sometimes, but it's really good. I have to say, yeah, absolutely brilliant. I'd put Powers in as a crime book.
Yeah, that's definitely...
Yeah, they're investigating murders, two detectives, aren't they? Just so happens that the murders occur within the superhero community, mostly, you know?
I think you find a lot of them. It's like we said at the beginning, like, you know, they're crime books, but they've got this slant on them. Like Tom Mortimer said, he's not normally into anthropomorphic stuff, but Black Sad plays it perfectly on noir tropes.
I know, Christian Wild Goose mentioned that as well.
Yeah, and Black Sad's just one of my favourite books anyway. I think it's some of the best sequential artwork you'll ever see in your life.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah, every page really you want on your wall. Yeah.
If you haven't discovered Black Sad, it's wonderful. And like Parker, it's that sort of style of noir. Do you know what I mean? It's smoke. Yeah. There's cigarette smoke and
sitting at bars and you know, dames and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There are rules to noir, aren't there? I listen to Gabriel Hardman occasionally talk on podcasts and stuff, and it's almost got like there's almost rules to noir. You know, someone's got to be. There's no good characters in a noir film. You know, and you look at Parker. Parker is he's the protagonist in many ways, the hero, but he's not a good guy, is he?
No,
you know,
he's the best of the worst, isn't he? Really?
So,
which is, I mean, that brings to my mind Sin City, which I think is one
exactly.
of
exactly. Yeah,
Sin City.
Well, he just took all those tropes and he just turned it up to 25.
Yeah,
you know,
that had the real big influence on me when I first got it through a trade, and I was like, "This is fucking the nuts."
Which one did you start with? I started with the Big Fat Kill?
The Dame for Kill War? No.
Was it the second one?
The Long Goodbye, the first one I've got. That's the seminal.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's really kind of, when Marv died at the end of that, I was very much into the kind of, the character dying at the end of all the stuff I was reading and watching the time. Even then, I was like, oh, that's fucking horrible, because such a great character. And I think kind of Miller realised that, and he's kind of, in the previous story, next stories, they were all kind of set before then, so he could be kind of written into it.
So that was the one that was in, was that in Dark Horse Presents? That, that was serialised? Yeah. What's the one? Is it yellow? Is it that yellow bastard, or what's that one? That's where he just uses that yellow colour. I really like that one.
Yeah.
To represent
the name, Tony.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
But essentially, he's kind of like that character's like rotten and foul. And
yeah. That's one of the parts of the film I really liked. I really liked that Bruce Willis excerpt in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good. I think that kind of worked better than a few other aspects of it. But. Yeah, I really liked that first one. I wasn't too mad on much of the other
stuff. I've not
seen
the second one still. No, okay.
See, that's the Dame to Kill For.
Yeah. A big fan, I was a big fan of the second one, which was the Big Fat Kill, I think, which is the one that was in the film.
Okay.
Where the Dwight character is with all those sort of prostitutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, oh, yeah, where he gets the gun stuck in his face.
Because Sin City, like, absolutely no one, if you think about it on paper, no one's likable, are they?
No, that's exactly right. And I think that's one of the rules you've got to have. You know, all the girls, all the women are sort of duplicitous, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're either like floozies, or they're just, you know, innocent housewives somewhere that you never see. Yeah.
The only thing that one of the tropes that kind of does annoy me, you don't see it so much in comics, but definitely in fiction, is the main character has got to have so much baggage if they're kind of an out and out good guy. It's not so much for kind of like noir stuff, but if it's kind of crime, they've usually got like a dead wife or kind of a wife's divorce for them, and they've got a problem with this, and it always seems to be how much shit can you unload onto them. It can't be just like Mr. Joe, nice guy cop.
Yeah.
They've got to have a drug habit or something. Do you know what I mean?
Did you apply any of these sort of rules to Propeller at all, Ricardo? Or
oh, all of them. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. As much as possible. Yeah. I mean, again, Sin City was a big influence. Sleeper that I already mentioned. All of these, and generally, like you say, noir comes with a whole set of rules, and we applied them as best we could.
I think comics is still one of the few mediums that does it well, because I think for a while films and TV turned noir into a parody, didn't they? It almost became like a cliche, but we get away with it still in comics, don't we? It still can be cool, and you know, readable.
You don't have a saxophone soundtrack playing in the background.
Is he kind of
things you can do in comics, like the way the light falls across someone's eyes.
Exactly.
When you try and reduce that in film and it lasts for more than a second, it just looks a bit awkward and cheesy for me.
I would say, would you class Drive as noir?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a film that does it well.
Touch to it. Yeah, I think so as well. I really like that film, actually.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I know a lot of people don't like it for maybe trying too hard, but I really enjoyed it.
I like anything with Robert Perlman.
Yeah.
The other one,
have you seen the advert for the Baby Driver or something?
Oh yeah,
no, it's his new one.
Edgar Wright.
Yeah. It looks very much like Drive, but kind of maybe a slightly lighter-hearted approach.
It's like Drive on caffeine pills, isn't it?
Yeah,
hyperactive.
I did rewatch the trailer to Drive because they got a lot of flack from it. And when you watch the trailer after seeing the film, it's like these are what it's advertising isn't what it is at all.
Okay,
I know, certainly when I first watched it, I didn't like it. It bored me the first time I watched it, and then I didn't actually finish watching it. And then I sat down to sort of give it a go, and I think it's one of those, you know, when you're just in the right mindset to watch something, and I just sat down and just.
I finished it and I thought, wow.
And plus, a pretty brutal shotgun death.
Yeah.
All right.
It's weird. There's one that I can name a couple of films where I've watched it at the time and thought this film is really special, and it's going to be one of my favourites. And watching that, I was like, this is one of them.
Yeah.
I can remember doing it with Napoleon Dynamite as well.
Oh, nice. Genius.
Nice.
Yeah. I was like, this is special. This is a really good film.
Yeah, your mother goes to college. I love that film. Yeah.
That's one of those you could quote it all day, couldn't you?
Yeah. But to be fair, a lot of crime films, people don't realise the comics. It's always the one that I pull out of the bag when someone says to me, oh, you probably wouldn't like Road to Perdition, it's not got any superheroes in. I say, well, I think you find that's a comic, my friend.
Yeah.
You know, the other one I always say is A History of Violence.
That was, wasn't that a science fiction graphic novel? Wasn't it?
No, don't think so.
I thought it was more of a science fiction crime story that Cronenberg made.
Not so long since I've read. No, it's John Wagner, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've only seen the film, and that was a while.
Yeah, I'd probably catch and flack. I'm not a big fan of that film.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it.
Oh, I like that film.
I think, I don't know, I'd get the Emperor's New Clothes in that film a bit. Anyway, like this is a comics podcast.
First time we've ever disagreed. Yeah. Moving it back to comics then, my favourite, I'm going to say my one now, Scout.
Yeah.
Which I know you've just started reading, haven't you, Ricardo?
Yes, I was going to spend this week researching for the show and, you know,
good man.
Rereading some of the old, but well, I didn't, because I just ended up reading Scout all week. It's so good. It's so good.
Incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't know how I missed it up until now. I was aware of it. I knew it existed, but for whatever reason, just didn't seek it out. And then, as soon as you said it was your favourite, I thought, right.
Okay, it is one of those beautiful series that, you know, because it's done and it's complete and they've told the whole story, everyone can just go in and just collect the whole thing and just read it all the way through.
Yeah.
I'd put it up there. I would genuinely put it up there with Preacher and Sandman as Vertigo's best series.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, genuinely. Mm. Yeah, 60 issues. Jason Aaron just completely fresh out the tin, on form, loads of new ideas.
What is it about Vertigo and 60 issues? That seems to be perfect.
It almost seems to be. Yeah, it does, isn't it?
Yeah.
Art by Aram Guerra, who just portrays the sort of horrible, bleak, nasty, vicious, violent, sexual, you know, Indian, Native American reservation. You know, it's just the bleakest place for them, meth labs and, you know, tattoos and just horrible sort of people fighting each other to the death all over the place. And, you know, it's...
But at the same time, you have characters that you root for. Do you know what I mean?
But they let you down as well. That's the thing. Like, I mean, the main hero in it, who at first you think, who's this horrible person? You know, he's. I hate the phrase journey, but fuck me, he goes on one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've read it, Vince, have you?
I've got the first book, and that's okay. Quality. Yeah. So I'm going through to collect all the rest. Do you know what I mean?
Actually, initially theorized to be a reboot. It was going to be a reboot of Scalp Hunter, which is an old Western series for DC. Mm. Yeah, and they kind of thought, oh, I can't really make this work. So they did a sort of Indigenous People series. Mm. And I think Will Dennis was the editor for a while. Everyone's got an awful lot of time for Will Dennis, haven't they, at Vertigo? He did some incredible stuff.
Yeah. It's also being developed as a TV series at the moment, isn't it?
It is. I think it might even be in pre-production or production now, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I know they've cast a load of it.
Yeah.
It's a sort of that secret in America, isn't it? That the most crime in any sort of area committed is on the reservations, to such a point where they often have to have the FBI take over the policing of the reservations because the local police just can't cope with it.
Yeah.
And, okay,
the sort of basic story is, what's his name? Dashiell Badhorse. He's kind of, I put in apostrophes, the hero of the series. He goes back to live back there. His mother's from there, as a sort of undercover cop. Undercover FBI agent who then becomes a cop who, you know, these various things happen to him. But it's got, I mean, it's a crime series, you know, but it's got moments of sort of strange spirituality, sort of, and it's also got some weird romances going in. I won't ruin anything for you, but the chief villain is Red Crow, who starts off as this almost sort of Victor Von Doom sort of horrible villain, you know, but they flesh him out. He becomes different to that. Yeah, really, really good. Just incredible. I recommend it a couple of times on the show, but it's one of the best things I've ever read, genuinely. You know, you can get it. I think it's in 10 trades or 5 deluxe. You know, they do these hardcovers. Sorry, Ricardo, mate.
No, sorry. I was just going to say, just touching on what you said about fleshing out the villain there. I'm only 2 trades into it, but he starts off, Red Crow starts off as this absolute almost caricature of like the villain.
Yeah.
And then you start to see bits of his past and you start to see, and you see that he's not evil for evil's sake. And it just reminded me of Southern Bastards, where they've done similar thing. Jason Aaron again.
Another crime book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Coach Boss.
Yeah.
The way he starts off as this almost caricature villain.
Yeah.
and then they flesh him out, and you end up almost rooting for the bad guy.
It plays with your perceptions, doesn't it? Because you start off and you think, I've got this person sussed, and then Jason Aaron and whoever his partner is, they'll give you a 4 or 5 issue arc about that character, and it changes everything.
Yeah. Aaron's great at that. He does one issue right in the middle of Scout about a couple who live underneath the flight path of the local sort of Air Force base, and how an old couple, and how the husband is sort of too proud to go and go to the food bank. And it's just, oh my God, it will absolutely break your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got such a grasp of character, Aaron. You know, he so has.
I think, for me personally, I think he's one of the writers, the best writers out there at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
And I like him even more when I hear him on podcast, because he just seems quite sort of
self-deprecating, isn't he,
He's fairly down to earth. It doesn't seem like he's let it go to his head, even though he's done all these mega projects.
Yeah, I met him at Thought Bubble a few years ago, and he was ever so nice, like really friendly, just chatty. He sat there on his own. I think he was just started his X-Men work.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. Really impressed. Yeah, it makes a difference, doesn't it, sometimes?
Yeah.
Was Scalped his first book?
No. What was the Vietnam one he did?
The Other Side. Yeah. The Other Side.
I've got a feeling it was that. I think it was that, yeah.
That's a messed up book.
I've not read that, actually. Is it good?
It's very good. It's very, very dark and very twisted, naturally, with the subject matter. The last sort of panel as well of that book is just, it stays with you. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Must give that a go.
Again, it's one of these. Jason Aaron again doing one of these books where he'll show you something from one person's perspective and then show you from the other side.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the villain in that case, but certainly the other, the opponent. Yeah. Should we say?
Yeah.
And he gets you rooting for both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Because a lot of times with stuff like that, people are just caught up in this, you know, in the fight or in the war. You know, they're not always the caricature bad guys, are they? You know, there's nothing's black and white.
Of course.
And I think Jason Aaron's one of the best writers at doing the greys in between.
We're so much more interested in the antagonist is as rounded as the protagonist.
Mm.
Mm. Yes, because makes a lot of difference, doesn't it? Yeah.
If it's just I'm being bad because I want to be bad, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Sit well, does it, really?
Yeah. Here's a question for everyone here. And I'm just going to take it to the basics. Which one is more fun and easier to write? Your hero of the story or the villain?
I'm going to say the villain, you know. I think a lot of people say that, don't they? I think the villain's fun to write. Yeah, I'm definitely saying that.
I guess it depends on the story you're telling, but you can usually, because the kind of the villain is usually more the corrupted one.
Mm.
Yeah,
you can kind of like push that more and have them say stuff that maybe you wouldn't be able to get away with yourself, and kind of break rules. And
And
I think we become more interesting when we don't see them in those terms as well.
Yeah.
Because they become more fleshed out. You see them as a personality rather than you see, you know, the cold hard Superman hero versus Lex Luthor villain. You know, this is very sort of cold, isn't it? Mm. But once you stray into something, for example, when Lex Luthor, after the death of Superman, you know, was it, you know, there was all that sort of personality thing going on. I found it more interesting then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And certainly people will take the heroes and they'll give them a sort of a villainous slant, you know, to make them more interesting.
Yeah.
I do that. I do that on pretty much everything.
Yeah. You've got to be flawed, haven't you, in some way? Yeah.
It's like, go on.
I was just going to say, I don't think I'd ever be able to write something like Superman. Not that anyone's asking, but...
You never know.
I wouldn't be able to do that straight hero, you know, no flaws, no... I like a bit of a villainous hero.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what puts a lot of people off these days,
you know.
From kind of, if you got the Superman Lex Luthor, you got like the Lex Luthor character who thought he was number one. Built himself up to this big empire and then realised there was someone better in the world than him, and he's never been able to deal with that. Whereas kind of Superman,
interesting, aren't they?
Yeah, he's been given literally everything he has. He doesn't have to work for anything.
Yeah.
He's got it all, which I can imagine some people find it challenging to write. I think I've said before, I would find that really difficult to write for that character.
Yeah.
The best one is that All-Star Superman, in my opinion. It's really well done.
Yeah, you really like that, don't you? I do as well, actually. Yeah, yeah.
The fact he's dying in that gives it such an oomph. It's
yeah. Sorry, Vince.
Well, I was just going to say, like, if you're going to tackle a Superman story, the way, not that anyone's going to ask me, but you just got to go for the full-on hope. You know, it's just got to be full-on positivity, I think, if you're going to write that character.
Yeah.
And hopefully write a book that people will walk away from and just feel better about themselves and better about the world.
Yeah.
Because that's not a character to really mess with in terms of, you know, let's make him really troubled. Because if you do that to Superman, you know, I don't think it works. I don't want that in my Superman. God, I say like that.
It's the way everyone's going to, in a Batman versus Superman, most people are going to go with Batman because it's a lot more identifiable than a Superman character.
Yeah. To go to transition from that, from being the best to being, if I was going to recommend a book you'd read after Scalped, it would be 100 Bullets. Has anyone read that?
God, yes.
No.
When Ricardo mentioned like the like light sources of eyes and that sort of noir sort of storytelling, Eduardo Risso's artwork on that is second to none. It's just
consistently just genius. Every panel in it,
and it goes from different sort of crime sort of factions, doesn't it? And different sort of stories. It goes all over the place. That story.
Yeah, and it's got that sort of little underlying story, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, there's that. There's the you know, is it Brother Lono and all these sort of people? There's that stuff going on, and there's this sort of darkness to it. But he's not, the thing is with him is he like Darwin. He crosses that line from realistic to caricature.
Yeah.
But holds on to the realism for me, and he's not afraid to make people just disgusting.
Yeah,
you know, there's some of the grotesquery of these people, you know, both you know, morally and physically in a lot of cases. It's just incredibly well done.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He's also an artist that likes to draw all the teeth. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like actual individual teeth. It's so I don't know about you, Dan, but when I draw teeth, sometimes you just do a lot of white, don't you, with like minimal lines just to sort of show this. But Riso shows you the whole chompers.
Yeah. I'm just looking at it now, and one scene is just a load of meat hanging up with a bloke standing there chatting to someone else, you know, like in the back of a freezer, and it's just horrible. You know, it's...
Then what is it kind of give, when you give people, you draw individual teeth, it gives them a real kind of animality and,
yeah,
I don't know, there's a certain element to it that when you just do kind of like the white...
Yeah, yeah. To sort of give that matter detail, like, you know, you're really putting people under a microscope, and certainly with a lot of people, you put them under a microscope, and they're not as nice as they initially seem.
I think because when you look at people, you kind of just take in key features or details in the face. Yeah. You don't examine the teeth individually.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when it does that in the art, you kind of, like you said, whoa.
Yeah, he's a beast, and he's doing great work on is it Moonshine, his new one? Which is
I've not read that. I must pick that up.
That's a great book, but that's Prohibition sort of era werewolf book, which is very, very cool.
So, yeah.
In terms of, let's have a poll, shall we? Let's see what, what our listeners have done. Our first poll, which of these is your preferred criminal when it comes to comic book stories? So we had four choices: bank robbers and thieves, murderers and hitmen. I put them together because hitmen are essentially murderers, aren't they? Drug dealers / runners and serial killers. Which of those four do you think that listeners / readers like most?
I'm going to say hitmen. Okay, yeah. Serial killers, I agree with you on that one, Dan, yeah. I would go hitmen myself, but I think serial killers is what they've chosen.
Knowing our audience.
The sickness that's out there.
What do you think, Ricardo?
I think there's something pretty cool about hitmen. Obviously not in real life, they're awful.
Yeah.
In comics, in fiction, I think, hitmen for me.
I'm quite available for £20 a week for 10 weeks, if anyone wants anyone murdered.
Just hashtag Mr. Quiet Shoes and he'll pick up the message.
Just tag them into the tweet.
Yeah.
You want done.
Yeah, I agree though. Like hitmen stories, just in general, are just one of my favourite things. Yeah, I always find that fascinating. But our listeners are voted, and in fourth place were drug dealers.
All the drugs are available.
Yeah. off the top of my head, how many drug type stories have I read or seen? I guess there's a lot of that going on in Scalped, I guess, isn't there, Tony?
The biggest.
There's a few that's the motive for the murder, I would say, more than just straight, like, oh, we're drug dealers, this is, you know, aren't we cool type things.
Yeah.
The biggest of recent years is obviously Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
On TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or The Wire, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. So in third place, with 21%, were Murderers and Hitmen.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Mm,
yeah. Second place, with 33%, was Bank Robbers and Thieves. Which doesn't surprise me, because I don't know about you guys, but there's nothing quite like a good heist story, is there?
Yeah.
I love that whole getting the gang together, you know. I love that sort of, you know. Even Silverwit, which is a book that I love, an indie book. There's essentially World War II heist story, but in Dracula's castle. Absolutely love it. Search it out. But they are a bunch of thieves breaking into somewhere. You know, I know. Is it Thief of Thieves? That's an Image book, isn't it? Is that still going?
I'm not sure. Is that Andy Diggle doing that one?
I can't remember now. My mind has just gone completely blank.
Not sure. To be fair.
But yes. So number one with 40% is good old fashioned serial killers.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I think they're definitely a go to for a lot of writers and creators, aren't they? And certainly my recommendation for this week, which is a new comic, is actually about one. So, which wasn't planned. It just happened to be a really good book.
I think probably serial killers fall a little bit more in the horror genre.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, depending on how they're treated.
Yeah, depends on the story. If it's if it's told, you're quite right. Sometimes it can veer completely into the horror genre. But
yeah. I mean, Silence of the Lambs is kind of an investigation into a murder, isn't it? But is it a horror story or is it? When there's that thriller, it's a thriller, a crime story. It's sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't, you know? Mm.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I threw it out to Twitter earlier in the week just to kind of establish what people's boundaries were on crime, what they consider.
Oh, okay.
And serial killers was one of the things that a few people said they would leave out. They think it goes too far.
Okay. All right.
Okay. They're right in a lot of ways, because there's been so many serial killer stories told that to get a truly memorable killer, you've got to keep pushing the boundaries and pushing the boundaries, which means that they're just getting sicker and sicker and sicker. One of the ones I think of in recent years, which is actually a pretty good book, but Nailbiter from Image. Have you seen that? That is messed up.
I feel like with the serial killer stories, essentially all they move towards is being a character study of the psycho.
Yes.
And it's not really a crime so much, because it's more just concerned with, look at this person doing fucked up shit and how they interact with the world.
Yeah.
Which is nothing wrong with that. That's the story. But I wouldn't really class it as crime.
Mm. One that I think sort of straddles crime and sort of murder is Whiteout. Have you read that by Greg Rucker and Steve Lieber? And that's interesting because it's like murders in the sort of snowy waste, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a sort of similar thing. I really like that as a series. Terrible film, but good comic.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of stuff that's like you see the ordinary person who's been kind of pushed to do something like that, and they're not a super cool hitman or whatever, and they've had to kind of use their smarts and knowledge to try and get themselves out of a situation they've got themselves in or someone else has.
Yeah.
I always find those kind of crime stories very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm looking at one now, actually, which is one I think I talked about in our first show, which is a book called Obsolete from Mikhail Sommer, about a Vietnam or a war vet who's suffering PTSD and has no money, so robs a bank. So it's sort of a heist story.
Yeah.
And with his two mates who are both sort of, one's flaky, one's not. You know, they're sort of stories.
Yeah.
I really like that as a book. Quite dark, but very well made. Yeah. Okay.
Serial killers, I think sometimes when they're written as well, they can be very... they're very caricaturish.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? They become almost Joker characters. You know, that people use a Joker template for the way they talk.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
They're very grandiose. I mean, but, you know, I like some serial killer stories, but, you know, there's so many of them that do that sort of thing that, you know, I'm tired of it now. I don't want
to... They almost have to have a spin on it. This is a serial killer who's obsessed with, I don't know, teddy bears. This is a serial who's obsessed with clockwork. You know, they almost have to have this sort of thing about them, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, there's an obsession that makes them, you know, this is the clockwork man, or this is the teddy bear killer, or, you know, something like this. It has to be something, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, which, of course, Batman's been doing for donkey's years. Batman's villains are all like murderers. One's a fucking penguin. One wears, makeup. You know, one wears weird hats. One's got a ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah, he's got the calendar man in that. I mean,
sorry?
The calendar man.
Yeah.
Murders on days of the year.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically, there's a lot of, you know, American detective TV series that are kind of just an extension of Batman villains of the week, aren't they? You know, The Blacklist, for example. This is like a villain of the week series, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We had a few replies to that poll. Well, just a couple. Level 8 Comics, old John Late. He said, the likeable serial killer has been done a few times now, but when done right, can be sometimes a very dark and funny journey.
Yeah.
I think you have to be a certain amount of black humour, don't you, into serial killer stories these days. Tom Curry immediately replied, have you checked out Bedlam? Volume 1 is well worth reading.
I've not read it. My son's read it. I haven't read it yet.
Did he make of it? I thought it was a word.
He really liked it, yeah. It's Nick Spencer?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I've forgotten the idea. Was it Reese? Oh, God. Riley Rossmo, that was it.
Okay, cool. I like his stuff as well.
The first volume, I think, is great. I think it loses a bit of steam after that first volume, but I definitely recommend that.
Okay.
Simon Russell got in touch again. He said he's not a fan of any. Following the crime usually equals formula. Quite like stories about private eyes' lives with crimes part of the background.
Right, is this where is he? Did he then write in and compare us all to different private eyes? Is this what happened?
Private eyes or private parts?
Oh, hang on. Yeah, wasn't I Mauser, Mike Mauser, whatever it is, from the PIs and the E-Man?
Yeah, I haven't got it on my list here. If I wasn't Jessica Fletcher, then I'd be very disappointed.
that's a great book, you know, Miss Tree. How cool is that name? Max Ann Codden. And he did Mystery, and then they did the PIs, where she joined up with Mike Mauser, who I think is the detective character in E-Man, which is a nutty book. That's a great book to read. I'll tell you what's good as well, which we must mention, is Gotham Central.
Yes.
That's a brilliant series.
Yeah.
Yeah. By Brubaker again. And David Archer, is it?
Wasn't it Rucker?
Oh, Rucker and Brubaker. Wasn't it both of them?
Was it? Or am I wrong? Was it Brubaker?
Well, a feeling it's both of them, actually, Duke. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. That's a great series as well. And that's basically detectives investigating murders that are related to the Batman universe, and Batman barely shows up in it.
I quite liked it because of that, I'm kind of done with Batman, and also it was, because of the nature of that story, it wasn't too tied in with anything that was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, Punisher stories often are heavily crime based.
Yeah.
I prefer the kind of the more street level stuff as opposed to when he takes on sort of fantastical kind of villains.
The sort of Max, the Max series. Sort of stuff.
He did that one about the Russian people smuggling. The sort of, they were bringing prostitutes to the country. So that was good. Really well done. Yeah.
There's that really. I'm not sure where it's from. It's a 2-page one, and essentially there's a paedophile talking to a girl online, and like they're back and forth the messages on the screen. You don't see the other side of the message, and the guy's like, "Oh, what are your favourite flowers then?" And it cuts back, and Frank's there. It's like posies. There is a second page which has kind of let me down a bit, because like in the first one they arranged to meet up.
Yeah,
and he says, "I'll bring you some of your favourite flowers. What are they?" And like he says that, but the second page is them meeting and the guy realizing he's fucked up. But you didn't need the second page of it.
Yeah.
It's the first one's like, oh shit, yeah, he's fucked.
There's something to be said about seeing him die painfully though, isn't there? Let's face
it. Yeah.
It's sort of but I know, I get what you mean. That could have just been a one page. That would have been genius. Yeah.
I have to try and find that, and I'll send it over on the WhatsApp.
Yeah.
I don't really want to be typing in paedophiles and stuff on the computer. Yeah. It's my wife's computer, so it's fine.
But
couple other books I thought I might mention. Has anyone read The Rinse?
No.
Boom book.
No.
It's what I think. I'm not putting words into Lambeau's mouth, but I think it's what brought him back kind of to comics. He did it with Gary Phillips, and it's a sort of there's a sort of heist element to it. He's about a money launderer for criminals. Really, really good stuff. Very mate, very good. And the other one was Cross Bronx. If anyone's read that. Michael Avon Oeming?
No. Oh, Oeming. No. Nice.
Yeah. Image book. Really good sort of detective crime story, but done with that Oeming, you know, dark shadows, caricature-y, sort of cartoony, just really good sort of sudden violence, you know, which Oeming does do so well, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Oeming stuff.
Um,
again?
And I can't let the crime one go without mentioning the best book at the moment, The Fix.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Nick Spencer, Steve Lieber, Ryan Hill and Nick J. Shaw. I've talked about it many times. I know there's a lot of our listeners who have picked it up, and as soon as they're in for the ride now. Absolutely just amazing comics, and hilarious and sick and wrong. So basically, if you're a listener of this show, it's a book tailor-made for you.
Yeah.
But it's about corrupt cops and a beagle named Pretzels.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it for you. You have to see it for yourself.
Is that the same team who did Superior Foes?
Yes.
Which happens to be probably my favourite Marvel book of the past few years. So I seemingly have fallen in love with these two men.
I hope you never meet them, because it might be one of those sort of embarrassing leg humping incidents.
Look, they can do whatever they want to me, as far as I'm concerned.
I bet they can. But I'll tell you what, Alan Henderson would kill us if we didn't mention some of the pulps as well, wouldn't he?
Yes.
The Green Hornet, essentially, is a crime book, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
He just happens to wear a mask.
Yeah.
I think in the Green Hornet, the idea is that he's playing a villain, isn't he? He's pretending to be a villain, but all the time sort of catching the criminals. I don't know how long that would last in real life, but that's the idea of it. Seems to have lasted about 70 years since the radio show started. And then, obviously, The Shadow and The Avenger, both sort of... crime-based books, aren't they? I mean, the Shadow, very much, that's his motivation, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, with a sort of spiritual twist to it.
We'll have to do a pulp show, definitely, in the future.
Yeah, I know. Definitely. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the pulp, so yeah, definitely.
Ricardo, I'd imagine that you'd write a good pulp sort of hero.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you read much?
I've not really read any. Seen a few of the films, like the Shadow film and...
classic.
Rocketeer kind of thing. But no, never really read them. I should. I absolutely should. Especially
they were much underserved up until recently. I know The Shadows had a couple of runs. The Avenger had a 4-issue run. But they were much... And Doc Savage is sort of patchy at best, comics-wise, here and there. But I know since Dynamite picked them up, you can buy quite a lot of them now. And they're all well-made. You know, a lot of them. The Shadow and Doc Savage books, especially. Doc Savage just started again. Really good stuff. Yeah.
Are there many sort of British characters in that sort of pulpy sort of style?
Interesting.
They do similar sort of things like that. People probably say, oh, there's this from 2000 AD, etc. But I mean, in that truly, you know, like the Shadow and Green Hornet, you know, all of those had that kind of feel to them, didn't it? That real pulpy feel. I don't think there's a gap in the market. There you go.
Yeah, I was struggling to think of that. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
One of the classics. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say probably, then there's been a few attempts at the comics for that, hasn't there?
Yeah.
As well.
I don't think Holmes necessarily translate into comics that well, really.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I think it's.
I know.
It's terrible, isn't it?
One of the best ones was I.N.J. Colbard. He's done some ones.
Yeah,
spot on.
No, but Liam Moore and John Repian have written some, haven't they, for Dynamite again?
Yes. Yeah.
What about Bond?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure how many good Bond comics there are, though, to be honest.
There's a few now, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a very good one. At the moment,
the Felix Leiter one, I think James Robinson's writing, isn't it? I think I noticed that Stuart McCune mentioned it today in his blog or in his mail out, and that's meant to be very good. I must pick that up. And Warren Ellis has just finished a run on it, isn't he? Yeah,
there you go.
But I mean, if you want to go back into that, I mean, we're particularly well served with the sort of TV versions of it, you know, with stuff like the Sweeney and Z-Cars and stuff like that, and occasionally they translated across into the comics, didn't they? And occasionally you had something like, and I mentioned him earlier, Dredger. And stuff like that in action, and then the British Weekly stuff, but it's slightly ephemeral to a certain extent.
Mm.
We were more sort of war and sci-fi, weren't we? I suppose.
Yeah.
You know.
So.
And football.
Oh.
Yeah.
So to finish off on this discussion, I mean, I think crime comics, crime isn't going away anytime soon. There is always more for it. I mean, in the small press world. Do you see that many crime books around small press?
Not
in the
much.
World?
No, not much. No.
Yeah, that surprises me a bit, really. I think. I mean, you see it more in the shorts you get in anthologies rather than actual crime books, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Someone really needs to write a book, a story about a bank robbery in the 1970s, don't they? Really?
Yeah. Maybe one day. Or about Dan Butcher's obsession with falafel.
Yeah. Great falafel robbery.
So to finish off this little conversation, the last poll, which is a bit of a psychological test for our listeners. When reading a crime comic, do you hope that the criminals get away with it?
I'm going to say no, and if you say yes, you're twisted.
Dan, what do you think? You were going to say yes, weren't you?
I don't know. There's sometimes I wish, like when I'm watching like a cop show or something, and like the detective was really obnoxious. I wish I could just get away with this once, yeah, just to see how that play out.
Inspector Morse. I was really not wishing to go on a TV tip again, but I remember I used to love the Sweeney. Then he became Inspector Morse, and I thought, what a pompous twat you've turned into. All he used to do is get pissed and go and see strippers, and now you're like driving your Jag around Oxford, or it is, and it's like
listening
rubbish.
To classical music.
Yeah, what's happened to you? Yeah,
you made it sound like it's a direct sequel. Like, yeah, absolutely.
I did make a joke at work the other day about Columbo, saying I'd never understood why in Columbo they show you the murder in the first 5 minutes. It's supposed to be a whodunit. And the kind of person looked at me like, what?
Yeah. Oh, another shout out for Nick Prolix, that he needs to do a Columbo comic. We keep pressing him, don't we?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be amazing. But I think with this sort of poll, I know it all depends on the characters, really, isn't it? If you know, you could like a criminal and want them to get away with it. Or vice versa, but for this poll, it was just very black and white, you know, like the law. You either crime pays or justice must prevail. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Ricardo, do you think crime should pay?
I'm gonna say yes. I you can't root for the villains in real life, the criminals in real life. So I think in fiction, you absolutely should be able to.
Okay.
There you go. All right. We'll allow that because that's a decent argument.
You're our guest. Yeah.
And it was a close poll, this one. It was 47% to 53%. But our listeners said, no, justice must prevail.
Good. I love our listeners.
We all love our listeners, but thankfully they also respect the law.
this feels eerily familiar, though, that we just found out that nearly half of
the
people who voted completely view the world in a different way to you.
Let's never let the country make their mind up about it.
Now, some of the replies. No, carry on, Dan. What were you about to say?
I'd say that's the trouble with democracy, isn't it? Sometimes you get the answer you don't want.
It's a shit thing, isn't it? Yeah. I think we just go back to having a king or queen. I think things would be a lot simpler.
It's a failed experiment.
Yeah.
You can't be the king, though, Tony. You can't.
Yes, I can. Then you could be the queen. And this is where I do the joke. Come and suck the queen's cock.
Oh,
you've role played this situation many times.
Yeah. Dear God. Right, the replies to this poll. Chris Wildgoose. Mr. Rictus, he said, it depends on the characters. If they're a massive dick, I'm going to read this exactly how he wrote it, actually, because it made me laugh when I read it. Right. If they're a massive dick, then I always hope they get a punch in the nuts from the law in the nuts.
Sorry. I have a little game that I like to play with Mr. Wild Goose. Is every week I have a different theme of things I just send him constantly. A couple of weeks ago, he accidentally said that Eddie Murphy had died, but it turned out to be Charlie Murphy, so he upset me. So I sent him lots of pictures of bananas.
And I was the one who got the short end of the stick when it came to that.
That was quite funny. For banana in the tailpipe. And last week, I sent him lots of pictures of the band Bewitched in the denim outfit. And he keeps saying, why do you keep sending me these? And I reply by sending him another picture. So
it's weird because when he told me about that, they were on fucking Pointless.
Oh, they were, weren't they? Yeah. So if there's anything you want me to send Mr. Wild Goose this week, we'll have a little theme every week, shall we? The readers can write.
He's
the listeners can write.
Shut that down, Tony. You know he's going to shut that down. And I wouldn't blame him. he did also say, a good anti-hero always pulls on his heartstrings and can be quite fun when they beat the law.
No.
I think it's quite good. Yep. Another answer we had here from Martin Shipp at Shippy Esquire. He says he hopes that even when he's not reading a crime comic.
Oh, okay.
What was that? Yeah. So he basically wants criminals to get away with it.
Want the underdog to win, don't we, sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a new one here. At @Wacker_XO, I basically always root for the protagonist. They have to be real scum for me not to want to see them succeed.
Fair enough.
There you go. So,
okay.
So
did I tell you I was out to kill the police on Friday?
Oh.
I came. I was coming home from work, walking past out from the train station, and about five or six lads on sort of BMXs and bikes came cycling down the middle of the road, and one of them on his shoulder had the biggest chainsaw and/or hedge trimmer I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, that warrants calling up the police.
Do you know what you've probably done there, Dan? You know, they may have been going on a Goonies-style escapade, and you've probably just shut that down. You, my friend, you're the killer of adventure.
Well done, you. Yeah.
When I see a 16-year-old cycling down the road with a chainsaw on his shoulder, massive, or a hedge trimmer, I was like, that can't be up to, you can't be up to any good with that.
Was it a fledgling
landscaping business?
Yeah.
Getting out, earning some money, and you just put him back on the streets.
Yeah, he can't afford the car, so he has to do it on the BMX.
Yeah. You just don't like independent businesses, do you, Dan?
Yeah. Not a fan.
So there you go. Crime comics. I think we can all safely say we're fans of them.
Yeah, I think so.
And there's certainly some ones that you guys have talked about that I've made note of that I really need to get around to reading, actually. I need to get fully onto Scalped.
This is definitely not my specialist subject, crime comics. I've been taking down titles all night. I have stuff I'm going to give a try. Especially Parker.
Yeah. Oh, mate, you'll love it.
You're in for a treat. Yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah, there you go. Just like this show is a treat, isn't it?
Oh, no, here we go.
It's not a segue, Tony.
Sorry. Oh. Yeah. Right there. That's a shame.
I was just being proud of us. I won't do that again. Do we have any shout-outs this week?
I don't think I have. No.
Does anyone?
No. We still got the character thing going. We've got loads of entries now. It's going really well. We put them all in the Dropbox, and me and Vince are going to kind of be looking over some design ideas. And
this is going to be an ongoing thing because, like I say, we're going to probably unleash a print of it at London Super Comic Con. So don't worry, there's no rush for anything because I know a lot of you guys are busy making comics or just living your lives. But we've seen some
payment required either. It's just send us your character.
Yeah. If you'd like your character to be part of this big collection, then
the first print. Let's call it the first one we do because it'll be a series, won't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine once we get a rough up, we get a lot more people interested.
And we've seen some cracking ones on there. You know, established characters and new ones, which is brilliant.
So send them through. Really good.
Tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, if I remember correctly. That's where you should send them.
Right.
My little shout out this week is a Kickstarter. The guys from Hellbound Media, they've currently got I want to say this right. Right, a shock value, Giallo. Is that right? You know the Italian
Giallo.
Yeah. That's the horror sort of Italian horror movies, isn't it? Yeah. You know what we like at pronunciation on this show. So they've currently got a horror comic anthology, all based on those sort of stories. Collection of short horrific tales, taking their influence from the classic Italian horror films. Currently on Kickstarter at the moment, they've already succeeded in their goal. So well done them. But it's good quality stuff that they put out, and there's always a lot of love that goes into it, and lots of different styles of stories as well. It's going to be a 72-page black and white, perfect bound book with loads of different artists. Go on Kickstarter, search for Hellbound Media, and you'll find them. They've done a few Kickstarters in their time, so you know they don't mess about with it. You know they do it quite sensibly. We like a sensible Kickstarter on this show.
We do. Yeah.
One day we'll do a ridiculous one, won't we?
We could do. We've got a few stretch goals we're thinking of, or high. You know, pay us £100. I'll come around your house.
You don't even have to pay him. To be fair,
I'm there now.
Yes. So, and the Hellbound Media guys are great because I'm currently in Comic House. My Mandy the Monster Hunter strip is just begun.
Oh, nice.
And work is going well on that. I'm enjoying the pages I've done, but I don't, you know, obviously I can't post too much about it because it's over the next couple of months. So
cool.
Yeah. I'll show you guys.
Yeah. I was the same with Suited.
Yeah.
Couldn't really put that online.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So some people probably think that I haven't been doing anything for a very long time, when really I've been drawing this
banana bread.
Look, my banana bread was fantastic, and my walnut brownies are amazing. So just back
off. I'm expecting
off.
Something at London. At London, you've got to fucking cook something, make with whatever you do, and bring it along. Yeah, we'll be fully expecting that.
You want me to bake for London?
Yep.
Shall I?
Yeah. Well, I got you a packed lunch last year.
You can make some brownies. No, you didn't. You didn't make me a packed lunch.
That's fair. No. It wasn't me. It's in my house.
Tony had a hand in it. Literally.
Oh, I hope he didn't. I ate them. Ooh.
Just touching the food as he goes in.
Cream in your coffee.
Oh, speaking of making, speaking of things that make you absolutely sick, Dan's got something he wants to talk to us about this week.
Oh.
He's bringing back a little segment.
Have you heard this before, Ricardo? Have you?
I'm not sure what's coming up, so
prepare to be learned, my friend, because it's Dan's Urban Dictionary Corner, which hasn't got a theme tune, so it will just be like yay.
This one was sent in by a friend of the show, Dan Charnley.
Good old Charnley.
He heard it on a supernatural drama podcast called Rabbits. They bleaked out a description, needless to say. Almost barked when I found out.
It's
called
What is the term, right, before you say what it
actually Welshman's
is?
Tiara.
A Welshman's tiara?
There seems to be a subset of Welsh things on Urban Dictionary. Yeah, quite a few of them. A few of them I read out. Welsh flag, Welsh flame, Welsh gorilla, Welsh head job, Welsh hot pot, Welsh hug.
Since Emily Owen has moved to Wales?
Tell you what, we know a lot of our friends from the Cardiff scene, so you'll have to tell us if you know any.
All of these were invented by Dan Harris. That's fair to say. I'm going to say that now.
Yeah.
So he'll be quite proud of that fact, I think, knowing Dan. Yeah.
Right. Ricardo, prepare yourself. Yeah. Ricardo, prepare yourself. And if this is absolutely revolting, I'm going to bleep it out.
I think you've had worse.
We've had worse. Yeah. Well, let's see. Dan, take it away.
Welshman's tiara. When one's partner shits in the hand and wipes it on the other's forehead. He docks me because I wouldn't let him give me a Welsh tiara. What the hell has the Welsh thing got to do with it? Because I clicked on Welsh hug. When someone hugs you with their bottom sticking out to avoid revealing their erection. Hold on, there's one more I've got to read. I'm going to click on it. That's pretty grim.
Right.
Welsh eye drop.
Oh, no.
Go on.
When a man comes in both of his partner's eyes.
Oh.
Jesus.
Is it like my quote that I did years ago, wasn't it? Yep, when you've come in me eye. That one.
That still gets me.
It doesn't paint a pretty picture of Wales, Urban Dictionary.
No. Wales, in other words, in other cases, is a very beautiful place.
Yes, and we love you all.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they know us.
Speaking of which, got Cardiff Comic Con coming up, haven't we? I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, beginning of July, I'm going to be there with my comics.
Yeah, I'm coming to that.
Oh,
I've been busy today, actually.
Vince giving a few Welsh hugs.
Yeah, we'll be wearing his Welsh tiara. You're on the poster as well. Yeah. Vince Hunt, down the bottom. Right, last name.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a good thing.
I think it's because your name begins with a V, to be fair. I don't think it's any kind of personal slight.
So they alphabetized it on first names.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? Yeah. I'm going to call myself Aardvark Esmond from now on.
Aardvark Esmond.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. It's your grinder name.
Yeah. other phone apps are available. Oh, I'm going to keep doing that joke. It makes me laugh, that one.
So, Ricardo, what did you think of Dictionary Corner now that you know so much more?
I'm enlightened.
The worst one we've had for me is the Dutch Hot Pocket, and that was
Alabama Hot Pocket.
Alabama Hot Pocket.
Yeah, don't do the Europeans down. I know you don't like them,
yeah,
but yeah, it's an American thing.
I mean, thank God Brexit, we're out now. Can't change that.
I've got to say, I made the mistake of Googling Welshman's Tiara. The image search, there are a fair few pictures of Princess Diana, so I don't know what she was into exactly.
Oh, God. I've got to do so much editing.
Hey, princess.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Let's get back onto the comics. Yes.
Okay.
After that disgraceful behaviour, Dan.
Be ashamed of yourself.
All of us.
I did not endorse that behaviour. That's just Dan wanted to send it in.
Every time Dan Butcher mentions one, he's tried it beforehand.
It's International Science Day or something, isn't it, today?
Yeah.
There have been marches all over the world about science, so that's just our little part of it there.
There you go. Yeah. People learn things on this show every week.
Yeah.
Ricardo learned never to Google anything we talk about.
Come on,
I've got to delete my search history.
Oh, we've all done that. Yeah, we've all got some comics to recommend to you lovely people, so who wants to go first with their choice?
Dan, you go first. How about you go
first? That kind of fucks me up because I've not done mine properly. I'm reading a comic and I've not done the review properly, so I'm going to postpone it to next week because I don't want to do it injustice. So I'm going to leave it till next week.
I'm going to do a very quick one then, if that's right. Corinne Mayer and Anne Simon, it is Marx, Freud and Einstein, Heroes of the Mind, which is, it seemed appropriate to do as there's an Einstein series about to start on Sky Arts. It looks pretty good, actually. Have you seen the advert for that, have you?
Who's playing Einstein in that?
It's an Australian actor, isn't it? I can't remember his name now, anyway. But this is a great book, anyway, whatever. But it's basically the three books that Nobrow put out. They put out one on Marx, one on Freud, and one on Einstein, and they put them all together in what it's like a big phone book size book, you know? It's properly irreverent. It's quite adult in moments, quite fun, but it basically tells the stories of each character. Often they tell the story themselves, so it's almost to the camera, and it's told in sort of montages and sort of little trippy bits, and you know, really funnily told. They really original in the way that they tell it. There's stuff like Marx says he's a citizen of the world, for example, while he's standing on top of a globe, and then there's a sort of description of how Einstein moved house by him sort of running over the roofs of a city. Freud's eating a cucumber and imagines it's a brain, and that's how he comes up with one of his theories. And there's a sort of little bit where Einstein's sort of seen piloting a spaceship through space and time, and that. So it's kind of educational stuff, but it's done in like a really fun way. The three individual volumes are now in one, which is 190 pages. It's like a phone book. This, guess how much? It's full color throughout. Guess how many? How much this costs? I'll give you a little. Go on, have a guess.
How big is it? How many pages do you say?
190 pages, full color. It's oversized. It's bigger than A4.
£20?
Yeah.
£14.99. How good is that?
That's really good.
That is really good value. When you think you can't get a Marvel trade for that, yeah.
Did you say it was a hardcover?
No, soft cover.
Ah.
It's like almost like a phone book. It's that sort of feel to it, you know? Brilliant, brilliant stuff. And it's from nobrow.net. Go there, or you can just find it on Amazon or wherever, or other booksellers are available. They get into a lot of bookshops as well, Nobrow. But really, really good stuff. Another product from that is absolute quality. Really good. That's my one. There you go.
Nice. My one is one I discovered this week. It's an Image Comics number one called Plastic. Have any of you heard of this one?
I haven't. No, not heard of that one.
I've heard of it, I haven't read it.
Written by Doug Wagner, art by Daniel Hilliard, Laura Martin, covered by Daniel Hilliard. On Comixology, the genres it's under are crime and risque.
Oh.
Yes.
You got that as a search term, haven't you?
Yeah, always. You always pop up whenever I search on that.
I know.
but here's, I think the synopsis will just tell you all about it. Retired serial killer Edwin Stofgruben is in love with Virginia, a girl he met online. Her affection quiets his vile urges. Together, they tour the back roads of America in their LTD, eating donuts and enjoying their healthy appetites for each other. Life is good until a Louisiana billionaire kidnaps Virginia, forcing Edwin to kill again in exchange for her freedom. Oh, and did we mention that Virginia is a sex doll?
Oh, nice. Now you got my interest.
This was one of those... I was intrigued by the cover at first, because you see Edwin on, you know, it's the classic sort of serial killer kind of cover. Edwin's on the, but he's holding a toilet brush in his hand, which makes sense when you're in the in the story. And yes, probably right, for those twisted reasons that you're thinking. but the way it tells the story, I mean, you know, the payoff is the sex doll element of it. But the way it tells the story, and like, it's just brilliant, because it doesn't, pardon the pun, shove that in your face. It's very skillfully told. It starts off with a sex scene where you don't see anything going on, but you know they're making love in the back of a van, and certainly you don't see Virginia for probably about most of the issue, for about 16 right, pages. You know, you only get that. I mean, reading that synopsis, I've kind of there's that sort of spoiler. The spoiler, you know, you kind of know what's coming, but it doesn't actually spoil it in the story, because even though you know it. I mean, reading that synopsis was kind of what made me think, this is going to be messed up. I have to read, see what this is, see what's happening here. But it's a really skillfully told story, actually. It's not going for the easy shock. It's not being overtly grotesque. There's flashes of violence. It's like all the great sort of crime and sort of serial killer type stories that, you know, it doesn't have to show you everything to disturb you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And certainly this first issue is funnier. It's a very black comedy, if you know what I mean. It's funnier rather than like shocking or twisted. The artwork is is absolutely beautiful. Daniel's artwork definitely reminds me. At first, I was reading it. At one point, I thought, this looks like Ryan Ottley did it.
Okay.
It's almost like Ryan Ottley's done like a serial killer book. I definitely see, you know, that influence in it. You know, Ottley or Tradmore. Or who's the other Invincible artist?
Oh, God. Corey Walker?
Corey Walker, yeah.
Okay.
The artwork's definitely in that sort of wheelhouse, and as we know, these artists don't mess about when it comes to the red stuff or the scenes of violence, like someone getting brutally, they have a bag shoved over their head and then their head is beaten in, but they deserve it, don't worry. The weird thing is, you're rooting for, we talk about like the protagonist and who you're rooting for. It doesn't really explain in this first story that he is a serial killer. You know, he's obviously twisted, but you know, we haven't found out what he does or, you know, what his past was. But already you're rooting for him, because everyone else just seems to be worse, or, you know, they're just greedy or vile, or, you know, something's going on. But I definitely recommend it. It's one of those sort of series that I definitely knew nothing about. It's not exactly something I don't think they can market very easily. It's not something you're going to see. I can't imagine. It's not exactly an all ages book. How do you market something that's like about a serial killer in love with a sex doll?
Yeah.
That's a marketing nightmare, isn't it, really?
Mm.
I would imagine it's going to probably be like a 6-issue series. You know, it'd be probably a really good arc. So definitely keep your eye out for this one. It's just released this past Wednesday, actually. And it's the way the first issue ends, it's like, right, let's see how, you know, it's just about to kick off. Things are really going to get dark and twisted. And yeah, really good. Really good. Plastic number one.
Cool.
Also, the logo's just really cool. It's got this sort of 70s sort of style font to it. But the eye of Plastic is in the shape of a woman in some ways. Like the dot of the eye is like a sort of a sex doll's head. It's hard to explain. You just have to see it for yourself.
Cool.
and it probably makes me seem like an absolute nutcase that I've talked about this book, but I don't care. It's really good. So that is my one, Plastic number one. Definitely check it out, especially our listeners. You know, they like something a bit dark and a bit twisted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ricardo, what's your recommendation?
My recommendation, it's a slightly older one. It's The Private Eye by Brian K.
Vaughan. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Marcus Martin. Tying slightly into our crime theme. It was available originally as a pay what you want download from Panel Syndicate. Mm. And I believe you can still get the whole story there for free if that's how you choose to roll. But I think once, for anyone who hasn't already found it, anyone who hasn't already read it, I think once you start reading it, invest in the hardcover. Go buy yourself the hardcover and then sit down and read the whole thing. It's just, it's such a gorgeous, glorious book. The idea is that the digital cloud has burst and rained down everyone's secrets into the world. And so people have started adopting secret identities in the real world, masks and things.
Okay.
And within that, it's this private eye, basically. This private eye stumbles onto a case with there's a murder and he's kind of thrown into this huge conspiracy. It's so good.
And it's a strange shape, the hardcover, isn't it? It's done like the webcomic, I suppose, is the best description. It's sort of a flatter format, isn't it?
It is. It frustratingly won't fit on my bookshelf.
Oh, God, yeah.
You're all OCD here.
Yeah.
You're amongst friends. Yeah.
But that's testament to how good the book is, because even though it won't fit on my bookshelf, I still have it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, I bought it for Alex Martin, a friend of ours, for Christmas, and he loved it. He said it was really good, great.
I've heard nothing but good things about it, actually. And I know certainly it got a lot of sort of notice for having that sort of pay-what-you-want sort of model. And I think a lot of people, even though they're getting it for free, they still did all right from it. Because I think if the quality's there, people will pay, you know.
Yeah,
I think
most of us decent people, aren't we? We don't run it or run off with it, do we? You know.
Yeah,
I think Brian K. Vaughan being involved helped a lot with that. I'm not sure if people would pay or be quite so generous if it was me, for example.
You're
right. They would pay what you want, but I think he said he made more money from that than a lot of his high profile gigs. So
really,
yeah, it really did well for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it says it all. You've got a good story, word of mouth, just can pay dividends, really.
So it's
one that I need to read, actually. I need to get hold of.
Cool.
I just need to find a decent shelf for it if it's such an awkward bastard.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of books like that, actually.
Yeah. They're annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we love them anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you love this show, folks? There's several different ways you can let us know what you thought about this show. Or was it criminal? one step too far, Fimps. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any events or anything you want to discuss further, or anything for the comics jam piece, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Like us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be announcing whatever the next genre-tastic show will be.
Hey.
I'll be sick to death of that word by next week. and it's going to be a good one. There's tons of genres we could do, but you know, there's another good one coming up. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join the group Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. It's just the best.
It is really good. I have to say, I'm usually, you know, a hater of all things internet, but I've got to tell you, not a more supportive community could you be a member of. Absolutely brilliant stuff. Yeah.
I mean, literally, if you're looking to start up your own comic and get into the small press scene, ask any questions that you like.
Yeah.
They'll be answered by people who've been there and done it.
Mm. Yeah, and don't be afraid, because people will answer it. I'll tell you now.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had a post on there where people haven't replied to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's
respectful. You get some unique questions from people's working spaces to a new one from Rudra.
Oh, about what's your shelf on your shelf? I like that one. Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that one. And everyone's respectful and really cool, and you know, and I don't always post on it, but I like reading it.
Yeah.
It's not that
someone
many...
just posted asking advice about their first thought bubble, which I thought was a good one. Oh. Yeah, really sensible. You know.
Nice. Yeah. So, yeah, please join that group and get involved. And, yeah, thank you for listening to us, whether it was on iTunes. Leave us a nice review on iTunes. Go on. You know you want cool. to. You love yeah. it. Well, actually, leave us a nice review wherever you listen to us, actually, whether it's on Podbean or Stitcher or on the website, you know, wherever you listen to us. We just appreciate you being here. I sound desperate now, don't I?
Yeah, we are desperate. We're
yeah,
desperate.
It's true. We are very, very desperate.
Yeah, we're very needy.
Yeah. And now Ricardo knows how desperate we are. He'll never come back again. But no, thank you, Ricardo. You've been
been great, mate. But
cheers, dude.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a blast. Thank you.
And go by Colossi. How are we saying it? Colossi?
I think we've established you can say it however you like.
Right, good.
Go and play.
You were very kindly sent the first three issues through, and it goes places you don't expect, and it's fucking awesome.
Yes.
One of the favourite comics I've read, and obviously this will be on the trade paperback. I liked it so much I bought a t-shirt. There you go.
he's not messing about, is he? He's going for a direct pull quote. Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll be on there.
And we hope to see you at a show later in the year, Ricardo.
Do, mate. Yeah, it'd be lovely
if you
to
make
see
it down. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to OxCon this year, next year.
I'll tell you what, are you anywhere near Chichester?
I can get to Chichester.
Yeah, there's one coming. I got emailed about one today about that, which looks quite interesting, by a friend of the show, which I'll talk a bit more about next week. But yeah, good stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
So cool. Much more to look forward to. So where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
EzoYZ. Or if you go to neverironanything.blogspot.com, you'll see the rant in question. Please bear in mind that it's done in character. Well, in my own character, to be fair, but it's kind of done in character. Have a read of it, and I'd appreciate any opinions that aren't just... Well, no, I'd like any opinions of yours, yeah. Especially if they're insulting. They're my favourite ones.
Welcome.
Yeah.
But thank God. Dan, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can be Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Nice. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and find out more about my comic, The Red Mask from Mars, at TheRedMaskFromMars.com. I've had quite a bit of fun with that today because I posted a thing on Twitter that one like, if someone likes the post. Have you seen this?
I've seen it, yeah.
If someone
likes the post, then you answer with a fact about your comic series and your comic.
I didn't realize that's what it was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's been quite fun to talk about the series, actually, and just give people a few sort of silly facts about Hopefully people have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And where can people find you online, etc., Ricardo?
I am on Twitter, Ricardo Motron. And in my header, there should be a link in my header to a pay what you want copy of Propeller Number 1.
Excellent.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's
very good. There. Yeah.
And we thoroughly recommend that one as well. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
You're going places, son. I can tell we're going to have you back.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know where you're going. Probably Chichester.
Yeah. Sitting next to me at a table in Chichester with me and all the people. Special hat.
Oh dear. Yeah, it's been another one, good one, folks. So everyone out there, thank you very much for listening. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics, get involved on Twitter, etc., and as always, stay awesome. See ya.
Been fucking baking again, have you?
Yeah, I have. I made some...
Did you make banana bread?
No, I made chocolate walnut brownies that were absolutely off the fucking chain. So,
do you do that sexy thing where you wear a pinny and nothing else?
No, I just I don't wear anything.
Do you find that particularly sexy?
Yeah, it's one of my many peccadillos.
It's Thursday. Put the penny on.
Don't fry chips naked. Doesn't go well. True. Trust me.
Dan Butcher, as always, the voice of experience.